listeners, a big warm welcome. I'm Phil Pennington, and this is Top End Doctors. On today's program, we have Dr. Renoma, which will talk to us about a very interesting topic called contact sports. So, Dr. Renoma, welcome to the Faith FM studios here in Townsville. Great to have you.
Oh, thanks, Phil. It's great to be back again at Faith FM studios.
Yeah, great having you here, Doc. And listeners, Dr. Renoma has given up some of his valuable time to join us today at the Faith FM studios here in Townsville. Doctor, for those that may not have heard the previous interviews with you, can you give them a brief outline on your previous history, you know, where you were born, how you come to Australia, what got you interested in medicine? Can you fill them in on that very briefly?
Sure. Yeah, I'm a Nigerian Australian. I was born in Nigeria, left when I was about a year and a half. Moved to Malaysia as my dad was doing some higher education studies, and then we moved to Australia after that when I was about four and a half. So I lived in Australia for a long time. I grew up Aussie. I started off as a chemical engineer, actually. And then I felt a call. I really see medicine as a call, somewhat to how pastors get a call. And it was around the time where I got baptized, actually, when I felt the desire to do medicine. I've always had that desire because as a Nigerian, I always joke there are only three careers you can do as a Nigerian kid, which is engineering, medicine, and law. Okay. I managed to do two out of the three, so hopefully my parents are happy about that. But jokes aside, I went into the medical field with a desire to really realize that how much of an impact you can make on people's lives when you can touch people at the most vulnerable moment. It's amazing when people are the most vulnerable. It's a very sacred thing. I don't take it lightly when, you know, their consent to operating, for you to operate on them. And as a neurosurgery doctor, I really feel that sense of responsibility and privilege. It's an immense responsibility, but it's also an amazing privilege knowing that there in that special moment in that person's life, you have touched their lives in a very profound way. And by so doing, hopefully, either through just by example or just by disposition. And some special moments I've had times where I could pray with them and reach them in an even spiritual way too. I love my job as a neurosurgery doctor.
Yeah, what a great motivation to really care that much for your patients that you would do that for them. Yeah. Doc, today we have a very interesting subject and something that I'm sure almost all people will be interested in, and the subject is contact sports. Mm. Now, you know, as I've discussed with you, I played a lot of high contact sport when I was younger. Mm. I was a rugby league player at the elite level, and I'm very much interested in what you have to say on the subject of contact sports. So if you can give us an introduction to what you're going to be talking about in regard to contact sports.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is an area that is very near and dear to my heart. As someone that has played contact sports as well, like I said in my introduction, as a Aussie, growing up in Western Australia, we played a lot of AFL. I was an AFL kid. Rugby union was a very foreign concept to me when I came to Queensland. I was like, what is this sport?
Yeah, AFL was Dr. Neymar is very tall.
it was a very, I played ruck and, you know, it's something that, that was part of the culture. You know, we watched it as a family. We had our favorite teams. But, you know, when it comes to contact sport, as a neurosurgery doctor, I would meet these patients that have had concussions. And these were young patients, and they had, you know, significant concussions.
Like how young?
Oh, we're talking about kids that are as young as 9, 10, 11, that kind of age group, not even teenagers. And they'll get, you know, massive hits. So then we'll have to tell them, you know, if you get one more, like the guidelines, the official guidelines are two strikes, you're out. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because we now understand with more data that's come through over the years how much of an impact that has long term in terms of developing dementia, early onset dementia.
Tell me, Doc, in your opinion, what good are is headgear. Helmets.
You know what? This may surprise our listeners, but actually, it actually makes it worse. It makes it worse because what the headgear does is that it may protect you from getting a fracture. And as a neurosurgery doctor, we have to treat fractures, but it actually makes the brain inside the casing of the skull more vulnerable because now it doesn't have that. It's more prone to those violent shear forces, that rotational forces.
So I always thought that, you know, with those, that whole impact of the head, that the brain sort of collides with the inside of your skull.
Exactly. And we get, when we look at a typical scan with someone that we may classify as a mild traumatic brain injury, which when we say mild, it's a bit of a misnomer because we will see evidence on CT scan that there's damage, literal damage inside the brain tissue, brain parenchyma. And so mild is a misnomer, but the reason why we say mild is because we have a grading scale between 3 to 15, which is how your conscious level. So 15 is like you and I talking, fully alert. We know what date it is today. You know our names, like, it's, you know, basic criteria for consciousness. And then 3 is, you know, like no consciousness at all. You're basically in a complete coma. So when we say mild is when you fall into the category between 14 to 15. We call it the Glasgow Coma Scale. And so even though they're mild, they still have radiographic evidence, let's say on a CT scan. There's some evidence that shaking, that violent shaking has occurred inside the head because our skull has these ridges. Yes, we have spinal fluid, like what we call cerebral spinal fluid that protects the brain. But it can only do so much, so that if the force is significant enough, whether, say, in contact sports, let's say a major concussion, then it can go through significant rotational forces and hit the edges, those sharp edges of the skull. And it can cause what we call contusions, which are like kind of like bruises that we see on your arm and legs, but it's just in the brain. And what can happen is that we often have to admit these patients to monitor them because those contusions, we use the term blossoming, in that because the blood fills in and it actually causes the swell, the swelling gets worse. And that can also lead for the GCS to drop down. And that means we may have to sometimes intervene. Most of the time we can get away with not doing any surgery, but we have to keep them under close observation. Even with someone with a mild traumatic brain injury from a contact sport injury, in case something worse happens.
I just want to ask you a question. I often see, like, in the game of soccer, you know, they head the football. And sometimes that football is going at 60, 70 miles an hour. Would you say that soccer is one of the safer contact sports?
Well, it depends on what we mean by safety. I'll say the short answer is no. We now even have evidence that it may not even be, it's a bit controversial whether it's the headbutting of the ball that's actually the culprit of this, what we call the long-term sequelae when it comes to this traumatic brain injury we're discussing today is what's called CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is found in multiple sports like American football, rugby league, rugby union, and soccer is one of the key sports that is implicated in that condition.
Okay.
And so when it comes to headbutting, yes, that's what they initially thought because there was a famous soccer player in the early 2000s by the name of Aston, and he died of CTE at a very young age. I think he was in his 50s, early 60s. And they looked at his brain, and they found that there was evidence of CTE, evidence of inflammation, and those proteins called tau proteins, which are like, we normally have healthy tau proteins, which are designed to protect your brain cells. But when it comes to those cumulative knocks, which it could just be caused by even just bumping into this collision, body collisions, repetitive body, and that body collision, because your body is connected to your head, that's enough to cause that violent shaking, not necessarily the headbutting of the ball. But I would say it's safer than the other contact sports in the sense that they found that on average, the onset of CTE was longer than than the other context. So usually they'll develop that condition. They'll see signs of that condition, I should say, in their 50s and 60s, whereas in rugby league, they will see signs of that condition in 30s and 40s.
Yeah, well, and I've noticed, you know, I'm a rugby league fan, and some of the head collisions are quite dramatic.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, it pales in comparison, even when it comes to American football. American football, you'll have around 1,000 to 1,500 head collisions, which is quite a lot in a season. That's child's play when it comes to rugby league, rugby unions.
You know, in gridiron, they wear those, well, they're metal helmets.
Yeah.
You know, you'd think that would give them a degree of protection, but...
You would think, but as is the case of, there was a famous footballer, his name escapes me now, back in 2002, which is where a lot of this, I believe 2002, where a lot of the attention started to come up, where a lot of the data, where people were starting to progress the knowledge of this condition. And he died, I believe, in his 40s. And there were certain signs, certain symptoms that he had before he died. Which is he had, you know, personality changes, he just become outbursts of anger, just odd behaviors. There was a case where, you know, his teeth fell out and he put it together with super glue. You know, he didn't think to go to the dentist, you know, something that, you know, common sense. And then eventually he had, you know, all these, you know, symptoms of full-blown dementia, and then he passed away. And so when they looked at his brain, they found evidence of CTE, and the helmet didn't help, you know. And like I said earlier, it seems to make it worse, actually, because it gives you that false sense of security. And indeed, you're protecting yourself from fractures, which is, you know, also, you know, it's a good thing that you don't get fractures, skull fractures, because they're not pleasant. We have to surgically treat it. And you also damage your brain with those fracture edges. Sometimes it can cause seizures. But the brain itself is still even more vulnerable to that. To that violent collision inside the head.
Yeah, the helmet designers go to great lengths, I guess, to do the best they can to deliver the best possible helmet. But once I went to, I had a pit pass at the F1 racing, and I was able to go into the pit area, and I actually picked up one of the driver's helmets. It was quite incredible because the padding inside the helmet was about 3 inches thick.
Wow.
And it was fairly dense foam. And that was covered in, I think it was leather or something like that. And when the drivers put the helmet on, they actually had to pull it down onto their heads and then fasten it with the straps. And
so they needed help to put it down.
Yeah, they had to really, you know, really pull it down.
Wow.
So the head fitted snugly in the helmet. And, of course, the helmets are custom-made to whatever shape, size head they've got.
I can imagine.
But I was just curious, do you get many incidents of, you know, head knocks from motor racing?
Not in this part of the world that I work in. Maybe, I'm sure. I mean, the principles are the same. I don't know if we have as much data in the motorsport world as we do so much in the other sports that I mentioned before.
Yeah, maybe because it doesn't happen as often.
Yeah, and they go through great pains. Like, you know, if you're having a head injury from motorsport, you're probably having other things to worry about to get that head injury because of the nature of the sport.
Yeah, like vision and reflexes and things like that.
Reflexes and, you know, hopefully you got out of that car in one piece to begin worrying about a head injury. And the technology is so advanced, and in terms of how they protect their drivers and things like that to be able to, you know, maneuver those speeds. But yeah, they're not in my practice. I have seen motocross, actually. I've seen a lot of motocross, but they usually have more devastating consequences to before we worry about concussion. It's more, you know, we see those patients in intensive care, and we have to do emergency surgery to, you know, relieve the pressure.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's time for a short music break now. And after the music break, we'll be right back in the studio with Dr. Anobe to further discuss the topic of contact sports. I'm Phil Pennington. This is Top End Doctors, and you're on Faith FM, Positively Difference.
When I look around and see the good things that he does for me, I know that I'm unworthy of them all. His blessings he so freely gives, I owe my whole life to him. I've got so much to thank him for. Yes, I've got so much to praise him for. You see, he has been so good to me. And when I think of what he's done and where he has brought me from, I've got so much to thank him of what he's done and where walk me from. I've got so much to thank him for. Yes, I've got so much to thank him for, so much to praise him for. You see, he has been so good.
Song there from Tyler Mullins titled I've Got So Much to Thank Him For. And we're back in the studio now, listeners, with Dr. Anurma, who's talking to us today on the interesting topic of contact sports. And Doc, you mentioned during the break that you'd like to talk about how CT develops. Can you just enlighten the listeners on what CT is and how it develops?
Yeah, CTE, as in the acronym, is encompasses what stands for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So it's in the name. So it's a repetitive, multiple traumatic hits that reduce that results in a condition called encephalopathy. Now, in medicine, encephalopathy can be caused by so many things. You can get encephalopathy. When we're saying encephalopathy, it basically means brain injury or brain damage or brain illness, like a pathological process of the brain that has gone awry. And that can cause by even like liver damage from alcoholism. And then you get, you know, build up in toxins and that infiltrates your brain. You can get it from, you know, meningitis, you know, some viral bacterial or infection that can cause that. Yeah, then you could also get it from a traumatic cause. You get it from stroke, repetitive strokes, and then with the trauma in this case, you don't notice the symptoms, when the disease process starts. So this process starts very early on in a person's career. And one of the things that I really wanted to mention was most people think that it's those main concussive events that is what is the driving force of that. But studies show that only 20% of CTE is caused by major concussions. The opposite. The majority of it is major concussions, but 20% aren't caused by that. That's a significant number still, which means that there's a thing called subconcussions, which means that you may not, you have brain damage, but you just don't have the symptoms. So that could be occurring multiple times.
Wow.
Within a game. You know, you get a violent enough hit, the brain still feels it, but the person plays on. You know, they don't have to go through the protocol of the league to sit out because they didn't have the symptoms, but they're still getting that cumulative effect. So even though it's not as violent in terms of the force, because concussion is four times more forceful than subconcussion, but subconcussions occur 500 more times than concussion.
Yeah, well, listeners, when we were off air, I was telling Dr. Anurma, in my playing career as a high-level rugby league player, I was concussed so badly one day that after the game, I couldn't even remember a lot of the game.
Mm.
You know, I scored three tries and could only remember one. And you said it had a name, amnesia or...
Right, retrograde amnesia.
Retrograde amnesia, yeah.
Mm. It's quite scary. And I meet patients all the time, like when you wait to have to take a history and you say, hey, do you remember? They're like, no, I don't remember.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's signs of that inflammatory process. And this leads to how it develops, because what happens is that when you go through any kind of force, it causes sharing stresses of those small blood vessels, which are part of your blood-brain barrier. So what happened is that over time, that blood-brain barrier breaks down. It becomes very leaky. And therefore, when you have any subsequent subconcussive episodes or concussive episodes, your brain is now exposed to inflammation. So that it's just getting direct inflammatory processes into the brain, which eventually develop those abnormal proteins called abnormal tau. And then that tau, which is normally designed to protect your cells, actually, causes damage to the cells, and it spreads throughout the brain. And then it spreads in the brain in the part that's responsible for memory, responsible for mood, and it's responsible for making intellectual decisions. And that's why people develop dementia, and then, you know, and mental health issues as well. Depression is very common, very common. Especially among the young, most of the patients that have CTE actually have depression from a result of contact sports, and they commit suicide. And and then we do the autopsy, and we find out actually they had CTE, and that can develop from even before teenagehood if they have to start very young to develop their career. From 8 years old. 11 years old, they can start developing symptoms of mood irritability and things like that, and depending on the volume of contacts, of course. Yeah, so it's quite a process, but it's insidious because you only notice it until you really have the full-blown symptoms, but that process has already begun years ago from the repetitive hits.
Yeah, is the effects of CTE... Does that happen more in younger people or older people, or does it discriminate? Or
it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't discriminate. It's it's what's fascinating is that, you know, as a neurosurgery doctor, you appreciate the healing power of the brain and to be malleable, but you know the significance of the forces that the brain experiences overrides that healing ability, especially when that player continues playing. It's, you know, irrespective of age, you're going to have the downstream effects later on in life.
Because old people are prone to, you know, contact injuries with their head too, I suppose, because, you know, they can fall over or whatever. So
that's a good point. That's a really good point. It's almost when in that certain age category, when you're older, they're more vulnerable. Because those blood vessels are more friable. Whereas when you're younger, your blood-brain barrier is, like, if you like, for lack of a better word, it's more stronger. It's less, more resistant to damage. But if you give it enough force or enough repetitions, it will break down over time. But when you're older, it doesn't take much for a head injury to occur. We treat a lot of conditions. One of the most common brain conditions we treat is chronic subdural hematoma, which is essentially a chronic inflammatory condition, because what happens is that an elderly person may have, when they were doing some gardening and bumped their head on a tree, they didn't have any symptoms at the time, they were, you know, none the wiser. 2 weeks later, they notice their conscious level drops, they're not making a lot of intelligent, you know, verbalizations, and their family's like, hey, you know, something's off. They send them to the hospital. We do a scan, and we find out that there's a big hematoma lying on your brain that we have to suck out with some burr holes. That's very common, and that's because the brain at that age is just very friable in terms of the blood-brain barrier. It breaks very easily, and that inflammatory process, that oozing of the blood, can occur. But that's a different disease process than CTE. That's more of a result of age, whereas CTE is irrespective of age. It's just if you have enough cumulative hits to the brain, then you develop that inflammatory process that can't be stopped.
Yeah, so if I got it right, like CTE, it's not. Sometimes it's not instantaneous. It takes time to develop.
Yeah, exactly. The bigger the hits, the faster. It happens faster than we think. You know, sometimes the condition develops very rapidly, you know, within 24 months, just progresses.
Well, Doc, it's been a very interesting interview today on a very interesting topic. Is there anything that you would like to add just to wrap this interview up?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, sports is a big part of culture. And I think it's something that we, you know, people have to really reevaluate. Is it really worth it? You know, putting your child at risk or yourself at risk in terms of getting those conditions, because it's devastating. We now have the evidence for that. And, you know, one has to really reevaluate, just to really think, you know, is it worth, you know, pursuing this lifestyle? You know, are there better things I can do with my time? Because, you know, the damage to the brain is so consequential that, you know, one, we really have to think twice. And one of my, you know, things that I love about God is that he cares about our physical health as much as it does our spiritual health.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so, yeah, I just want to, you know, share that message to, for our listeners today.
You know, I guess parents find themselves between a rock and a hard place because their kids, both male and female, because, you know, the girls want to play netball and all that sort of thing. The guys want to play rugby league or soccer. I mean, they can't really turn around and say, no, you're not going to do that. Well, they can, but the kids will probably play that sport in the schoolyard
or,
you know, down at the park. It's they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
Well, what would you say to parents when they're faced with that dilemma?
Yeah, I think provide them with the education, you know, get them to listen to
so they
podcasts.
Can recognize any change in their child.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. They can recognize the change, but even as a preventative strategy, show them this podcast, this show, because sometimes it's hard when if it comes from mum and dad, it comes across as, oh, you're just being a spoiled sport. You know, what do you know? You know, whereas if it comes from, you know, someone that's got a MD after their name, you know, maybe they might listen a bit more, especially if it's from a younger person as well that also had a passion for sports. You know, it's, you know, I can relate to that, you know, as a young person myself who's played basketball, you know, a lot of my life, you know, we're, you know, it's not a contact sport. It's not a non-contact sport, basketball. You're getting hits as well. And, you know, and I played AFL. So I understand, you know, the allure, of it. But it's, you know, the amazing opportunities that is that is available for a young child that's able to just being able to make the best choices and be convicted in that in themselves, knowing that, you know, God has something amazing for my life.
Yeah.
I want to pursue this pathway. It may not be the mainstream, but I know that God's going to use me in a powerful way.
Yeah, I guess if you want to keep your child, you know, 99% safe, you'd suggest they join the chess club or something.
Yeah, there we go. That's a your potential option. You know, it's, you know, it's the thing. Like, one of the things I find frustrating is that, you know, it's no point saying what not to do. It's offer something better. You know, as the Bible says, overcome evil with good.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there's so many things like, you know, I know people are involved in Pathfinders and Scouts, and that's, you know, I wish I had that experience. I didn't grow up as a churchgoer in that sense, you know, I didn't go to, you know, Pathfinders. That looks so much fun, so interesting.
They enjoy the great outdoors, and camping skills,
and
all that sort of stuff, which is, I guess is a much better path.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Anamar, I thank you very much for your time today. And listeners, I would recommend that you share this program with other parents. And if they haven't got Faith FM, just show them how to download the free Faith FM radio app straight onto their phone from their favorite app store, and then they can listen to us anytime, anywhere. But I thoroughly recommend that you share this news and this information with parents in your group, so they can be fully aware of the consequences of contact sport and the effects on the brain. Dr. Anamar, thank you so much for coming in today. You've given up your valuable time on your day off. So once again, thank you, Doc, for coming into our Townsville studios.
It's my privilege as always.
Well, listeners, that brings us to the end of this episode of Top End Doctors. Check program guides at faithfm.com.au, or even better still, download the free Faith FM radio app from your favourite rap store, straight onto your phone so you can listen to us 24/7, anytime, anywhere. I'm Phil Pennington. This is Top End Doctors, and you're on Faith FM.